millions of Americans are hesitant to get the vaccine. Is it fear, misinformation, or disinterest? Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. The number of people getting their COVID-19 vaccine has slowed down. We have a panel discussion today to discuss where the hesitancy is coming from and a new campaign to get people vaccinated. Also,
Miami desperately needed interpreters because so much was happening and that it was very hard to get a sense of the coherent story.
We're reading Miami by Joan Didion for the April Sundial Book Club title. We'll hear from a former Miami Herald reporter who gave Didion a tour of the city before she wrote her famous book. But first, can a private school make its teachers not get vaccinated? All of that today on Sundial, after the news. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. A Miami private school is warning its staff against receiving a COVID-19 vaccine. Setner Academy's co-founder sent a letter to parents and teachers saying it will not employ anyone who has been inoculated against the virus. The letter included misinformation about the potential risks of getting vaccinated against COVID. They did not cite any scientific evidence. Colleen Wright is the Miami Herald's education reporter, and she joins us now. Colleen, what do we know about the school and how they operate?
I think knowing about the school and how they operate is key to understanding how all of this happened. So to be clear, the founders of the school are a couple named David and Layla Centner. David Centner is actually from Miami. He's local. He went to Coral Park Senior High. He worked at Frankie's Pizza. He went to New York and met Layla Centner, who's a businesswoman. Together, they ran a business called Highway Toll Administration and sold it for an undisclosed amount, but a seemingly exorbitant amount of money, and came back down to David Centner's hometown to raise her two daughters. They weren't really happy with the educational options down here, so they decided to make their own school, basically. And they kind of centered it around the happiness school. It's definitely eccentric. I'm told a lot of people don't like that word, but it's definitely out of the box. And everything is kind of on the Centner's terms. They've since merged with another school. There's been some rifts there. But a lot of it has really just been two, you know, philanthropists, wealthy parents, you know, who have this fortune, who wanted the school for their daughters.
And by the way, they operate out of the Design District and Edgewater, I believe. That's where the school's at, around that area.
Yes. So the first campus, the preschool campus, is in the Design District, like bordering the Buena Vista area. And the elementary and middle school, and I guess soon to be high school possibly, is in the old Aspira Charter School in Edgewater.
All right. So they're warning staff against taking the vaccine. How is this communicated? I mean, you know, what did they claim?
Last week, Layla Centner, who's kind of the one kind of behind the operation, she sent a letter, I believe it was on Thursday, it was sometime last week, saying that, you know, it's with a heavy heart that she has to do this, but apparently some of her staff members have already been affected by the vaccine with menstrual cycles, that their menstrual cycles have been off. And she wanted to take a survey, and there was a link to a survey about how far along, if they were vaccinated, how far along were they? Did they have one dose of Moderna, one dose of Pfizer? Did they already have Johnson & Johnson? Did they complete the vaccination cycle? And they pretty much said, our intent is to not employ anyone who's taken the vaccine. And if you already have it, please do not come to school because they don't know how it affects unvaccinated people. So that's kind of the crux of this, is that they're concerned with how children would be affected with having vaccinated adults in the room.
And how do they back that up? With what?
There's a lot of links in this letter to really just misinformation, kind of like these websites that track COVID deaths. And that was kind of the key, is that she was saying, Layla Centner kind of wrote that, you know, there's not enough information. We don't know how safe it is. She kept referring to it as an experimental injection. And there were just links in there to all these kind of websites and things that are not rooted in science. Nothing has been proved.
Yeah, we, you know, it turns out we spoke to her. We spoke with the founder and CEO of the Centner Academy, Layla Centner, in August of last year, and she talked about the school's lax policy on masks back then.
But I do know that there are kids with asthmas or they have certain issues that they can't wear a mask and they're allowed to not wear a mask. And I know that there are some teachers that have some health issues that they're not allowed to wear a mask either. And so the rule as it stands is you have to wear a mask unless you have some sort of, you know, disability or something happening or you're doing physical fitness.
All right. So, Colleen, you heard from infectious disease specialists in response to how the school is handling COVID. What did they say?
Yeah. Dr. Eileen Marty, this is the infectious disease specialist from FIU's College of Medicine, who has been advising Miami-Dade County Public Schools, City of Miami, you know, local government on how to proceed and act during the coronavirus pandemic. And she said that she was aghast and that this is actually very dangerous to put out there. And who knows what kind of seeds of misinformation this might spew. But it's important to note, you know, you played an audio clip of Layla Centner talking about masks. I just got off the phone with the teacher where I actually talked to you back in August, who said that she encouraged people to not wear masks, that there was no social distancing, no masks, very uncomfortable. And that's kind of always been the case. So it's not really surprising that this is coming out now. Of course, this is such a step up. I don't know legally what they can do to stop employees from getting vaccinated. But this is certainly a long time coming. And remember that this school is pretty much entirely in the control of two very, you know, a very rich couple, you know, with their own agenda, who are just making a school for their daughters.
Yeah. And the letter that was sent out to parents and teachers advises that if a teacher is to get vaccinated, they could lose their job, as you pointed out. But so we don't know legally what can happen, but it's a private school. Does that mean that they just have more autonomy? They could get away with that? They could do that?
Private schools have a lot of autonomy. It's actually pretty shocking. You know, you don't have to have, for example, certified teachers. You know, every teacher in a public school is certified by the state of Florida. It's a rigorous process. In private schools, that's not really the case. Some private schools do require it anyway, because why wouldn't you want to have those kinds of standards? But you really don't have to. And I'm not sure. I'm looking into that too, like how legal that really is. The United Teachers of Dade, actually, the teachers union that obviously represents teachers in public schools, actually said that it was an unfair, they called it an unfair labor practice. But I'm actually not sure. Private schools have a lot of leeway. As far as I know, they don't take government money. They said that they just didn't want to be tied to any government mandates. So BPK, they did not have the school. I don't know if that's since changed. That's also something I have to look into. But they were also no fan of really following any kind, you know, taking in any kind of government money or scholarships or anything like that. Because they just didn't want to adhere to any kind of rules that would be put, you know, placed on that money, tied to that money.
Colleen Wright, she's the education reporter for the Miami Herald, and you can read more on this story on our social media at WLRN Sundial. Colleen, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And by the way, that interview that we did with Layla Centner, it is online at WLRN.org. If you want to go back again, that was from last fall. Well, still to come. Are you hesitant to get the vaccine, or someone you know hesitant? Call in now, 800-743-9576. We have a panel conversation coming up. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Half of all adults in the U.S. have received at least one dose of a COVID vaccine, according to the federal government. Florida is still trailing close behind, with 40% of the population having received at least one dose. Everyone 16 or older is eligible to receive the vaccine in every state, but demand and interest in the vaccine is wavering, and that could put herd immunity at risk. We've assembled a panel of experts and people knowledgeable on vaccine rollout to discuss vaccine hesitancy. Dr. Cheryl Holder is an associate professor at FIU's Herbert Wertheim College of Medicine. She's also partnering with the James Wilson Bridges Medical Society to ensure greater vaccine equity in Black communities. Dr. Holder, welcome to the program. All right, we're going to still get her. She'll be on in just a moment. Dr. Edward Michael is an epidemiologist with the University of South Florida, also joining us. Dr. Michael, thanks so much for the time.
Hello. Yeah, and I'm glad to be here.
Great to have you. And also joining us is Veronica Zaragovia, WLRN's healthcare reporter. Veronica, thanks again for the time.
Thank you, Louis.
And I just want to mention again that, you know, the question that we're posing right now is this: are you hesitant, or do you know someone who is hesitant to get the vaccine? for any reason, doesn't matter. We want to hear from you. Why? What questions do you have? Now is the time to call 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. If you want, you can always just send it to us via Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial, or send us an email, sundial@wlrnnews.org. We'd love to hear your questions and your thoughts about this. All right, I believe that we do have Dr. Holder there now. Dr. Holder, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Hello, good afternoon.
Great to have you. Dr. Holder, what have been some of the primary concerns that folks have brought up to you about getting their shots?
So far, it's the usual things that we hear, the safety issues. Is it a safe vaccine? Especially since the Johnson & Johnson, there's more concerns what would be the side effects and what would be short-term side effects and long-term side effects. I just had a patient today who has multiple medical problems, and we had to go through the risk and the benefit. And that's another area that they can't quite understand when we talk about risk involved, how much risk that they will have. And so if you get the infection over not getting the infection, why do we recommend the vaccines to reduce your risk? So the issues come around risk and side effects. That's the biggest issue right now that I'm dealing with.
Wow, that's interesting. So it's a little bit more fear than it is the issue of access. There is access. It's just...
The access has improved tremendously. Now, for some populations that don't really have ready access to car or somebody to take them there, and they have to work around the schedule, but I'm letting folks know that even with that, there are many sites that they can go later in the evening after work. It's not a long wait. So the access has gotten better, but still what I hear and I feel is that if they had much more of a trusted person when they got to these sites, like when you go to a big FEMA site, there's still a little bit more fear and concern.
Yeah.
So I think that we have to have a delivery system that addresses more of this concern, this fear, and have more people trusted around them that they will decide to get the vaccine.
Yeah. Veronica, we've talked about this a lot. I'm wondering, you know, this was back before the vaccine was widely available to everybody, when it was just going out to small groups. But now all of a sudden there's a hesitancy. What are you seeing in your reporting? Is it what we're hearing from Dr. Holder, or is it something else? Is it, you know, non-factual information, conspiracies? Is it social media? What's going on?
No, it's the same. What Dr. Holder had mentioned, what I hear is people still concerned with the, let's say, the speed at which the vaccines became available, which I do want to make sure that our listeners understand that researchers did not do any shortcuts. Like the FDA issued its emergency use authorization based on trials that are required of any vaccine. But they that's what they're worried about, that they fear it might have an impact on their health. And I mean, one gentleman I spoke to on Sunday at Miami-Dade College, he's 47. So I said, well, how come you took a little bit to get vaccinated? And he said, well, I was just concerned that there was still a long wait. And so I think, you know, it does take a little while for people to know that now there are many more sites. Most places now aren't even requiring appointments. So there's a little bit of just, every site having a different system is part of the problems that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, definitely. There was at the beginning, it was a challenge, people getting their vaccines. But I've got my second one, and I could say I was at the North MDC campus, and it was wide open.
Right.
I mean, it didn't take long at all. Very quick. Dr. Michael, it's your responsibility to track the virus spread across Florida and the U.S. What have you seen, you know, that gives you optimism that we're getting closer to reaching that herd immunity?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, what we are seeing, and we've been fitting these models to data, you know, ever since the pandemic began. And these are data-driven models. These are just like hurricane models. We use data to parameterize the models, and then we use those models to make forecasts into the future. We track, you know, people moving, and that is important because that shows how much there's mixing at the county level, you know, across the states that we follow. But we also now are bringing into play, you know, the variants, especially the UK one, which is the dominant one, and also the vaccinations, which are rolling out across the US. The first thing to note is that, you know, there's been astonishing progress, you know. Suddenly, the U.S. has hit, you know, up to above 40% of the people, you know, getting at least their first dose. I mean, that is tremendous progress, you know, if you think about it. This is a huge country, you know, and for hitting 40% is huge. You know, if you look at the global vaccination rates across countries, you know, the U.S. is up there. It is the third most, I think, you know, if you look at... you know, the share of people who got the first dose. So that is something that we need to bear in mind. And the second thing, what does that do? I mean, what that does, if you combine that with acquired immunity, which is, you know, which populations have acquired in a true time, you combine the two, we, in many states, in many counties in the US, we have hit a landmark stage. We have hit a turning point, which is now there are more people immune than people who are susceptible.
Wow.
So the fraction susceptible is shrinking, okay. And that has got implications.
And what about, so then you have, that's good news, but what about the slowing of vaccination rates? Does that give you pause?
Well, we take that into account into our forecast as well. And we are showing that if the current vaccination rates were to stay, you know, into the future, then in many counties, we're going to hit herd immunity. And we are setting herd immunity very high at 90%. People need to be immune, you know, which is impossible to meet, okay? Despite that, and this is our worst case scenario, scenarios that we are modeling. Despite that, we would reach, you know, by the end of July with the current rate. Now, if the current rate were to be halved, you know, we will reach that high level of herd immunity in the middle of August.
That is good news, because that's around the corner. That's before
that
we know.
That is around the corner.
Wow.
Exactly right.
So this is Dr. Holder. Yeah. I just thought of one of the concerns I have is we look at the community as one, but much of our community is still very segregated.
Exactly.
So when you break it down socioeconomically, the populations that are not as immune and not vaccinated tend to stay among each other.
Yeah.
So I'm very concerned that we may have herd immunity, let's say, Aventura, but not so much when you get to Liberty City or Little Haiti.
Right.
And so then we may start pulling back on our efforts. And what we really need is to find a delivery system that really meets the population in these communities. And it may not be a large FEMA site.
Yeah.
And that's what I was looking at.
Let me just say something about that as well. I mean, I was going to come to that. You know, now we are getting into this kind of spatial effects. You know, you're going to find clusters of people who are susceptible, and they might be, you know, they will be surrounded like it was mentioned. You know, populations are highly segregated. The connections are within groups, particular groups. Now, you might find, and we talked about vaccine hesitancy and vaccine resistance, you know, as two separate terms. You know, you might get, you know, pockets of the population who are immune. But, you know, even if infections were to occur, this will be like, you know, after a forest fire. You might get flare-ups here and there because that is the fuel. You know, the numbers of people who are susceptible. And that will burn away very quickly. You know, so... once you pass this 50% of the population which are immune, then the spatial effects will begin to play a role.
This is an interesting point. I wanted, and we're going to get back to this in a moment too. But again, just that's good news to hear. But as Dr. Holder says, that's true. We're talking about different people are segregated in different communities. Again, I want to put out the number. It's 800-743-9576. Talking about this vaccine hesitancy, why are people being hesitant? Are you or maybe someone you know, how do you have that conversation with someone if you've gotten your shot? I want to go to the phones. We've got quite a few people who have called in. I want to start, I believe, with Dawn. Do we have Dawn in Pompano?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Dawn. Yeah, Dawn, tell me, what are you thinking about this?
So originally, I really would have preferred to wait a year or two, only because we don't have longitudinal studies, because time has to pass before you can have them. And then I had a conversation with a good friend that I've known for decades, and she said, you know, I have to believe at this point that the physical and mental toll that I'm suffering from being terrified of getting this virus is worse for me than any potential long-term side effects of the vaccine. And that really resonated with me.
Mm.
And so I talked to my doctor, and he said, no, get it. So I'm 60 years old. I have no real health conditions, thank God. And I got my second dose of the Moderna on Friday. Minimal side effects, and I feel great.
Dawn, that is a fascinating point. I never thought about that. I mean, I wanted to ask our experts about, you know, how fast the vaccine came out, and of course the studies that are going on right now about it. But really interesting point, and I'm glad that that you got your second one and you're feeling better. Dawn, thank you for that insight. Very interesting. Thank you. I want to go back to the phones.
Definitely great. I had a patient today who said that she heard so many people are dying from the vaccine. And I'm like, no, that's not quite true. And we talked about she felt she was well, just like their caller did. And we talked about but her fear level. And so it's very important. I felt the relief I felt when I got vaccinated so I could come see my patients and do what I have to do with a lot less stress. Mm. That even if I got a little sick, at least I know I'm not going to get the worst stage of the disease, which is what we see.
Right.
And so that does help in, again, understanding your risk.
Yeah. And it's that stress, as Dawn pointed out, her friend had said, it's that stress of just living the way we've been living for the last year and a half has put a big toll on a lot of people. I want to go next to Lori in Miami Beach. Lori, thanks for waiting.
This is Lori in Margate.
Oh, you're in Margate. Okay, Lori, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So tell me, Lori, what about you? What do you think?
I have not been vaccinated, and I'm not in any hurry to get vaccinated. I'm 61. I don't have any underlying conditions. And my thoughts are, I had the flu shot many years ago, 2 years in a row, and I became very ill. I mean, almost hospitalized ill. And I thought, well, if this is, they're going to be injecting me with, you know, same kind of situation, I don't want to get ill like that again. And I haven't had the flu, so I don't see any reason to take it right now.
What are the questions that you have for yourself and how long you want to wait or what you want to see that would, I guess, you know, finally convince you to say, all right, go ahead.
If the numbers are going down, I mean, the job that I have is pretty isolated anyway. And I'm not around a lot of people, so I don't know that I need to get it. I'm not sure why I would have to. If there's going to be herd immunity and it's going to eventually dissipate, I don't know. Or is this going to be something, my question is this going to be something that's going to be around forever?
That, of course, is the question right there. Exactly. Well, right. Thank you so much for that, Lori. I appreciate it. Dr. Holder, I'll start with you. You know, she feels that I'm not at risk, and she has that history of getting flu shots and then getting sick. Have you heard from patients who have that fear? I'm just going to end up getting sick.
Yeah, very, very real fear. And many times it depends on what the flu vaccine was and what year, because we do have history of flu vaccines creating issues. What we do know is the immune system changes over time. So if that was 5-10 years ago, it's a whole different immune system that may not be as hypersensitive and react to this vaccine. So that I don't know, but that's, again, risk and benefit. So when you think about it, you can use the social methods that we now have, which is masking, social distancing, staying apart from people, you decrease your risk of getting exposed and getting infected, but it doesn't go to zero. And as you get older, you may do poorer if you get infected. And since this is a novel coronavirus, if you get the right dose, you're going to get some degree of infection, whether you're asymptomatic, symptomatic, to death, because our bodies have no immune system to fight against it. So that's the risk that everyone has. So if you can stay isolated, then you can wait it out. but that's a huge emotional toll for many people, and many people can't afford to do it. So my patients can't afford to do that. So the risk-benefit is very different to the population that can't afford to do that.
Yeah,
but
that's
if
an
you
interesting.
I understand the decision.
That's an interesting point. If you can do it and you can just keep yourself isolated, you lower that risk. Dr. Michael, I know that you have to get going. I wanted to ask you this. We've seen the spike of cases around the world in parts of Latin America like Brazil, but also especially in India, where there's been this incredible jump. How much did relaxing social distancing guidelines play a role in what we're seeing in those places?
A huge amount, you know. And I think India took the eye of the ball. They thought they did really well during the first wave. They released all social restrictions, you know, people in huge election rallies, religious events, you know, the weddings, you know, in India, those kinds of things. Because, you know, there was this narrative that that Indians had some amount of acquired immunity because of exposure to other coronaviruses. So therefore, they thought the reason they did well during the first wave was partly because of that, you know, and therefore they didn't give enough credit to what the draconian lockdown actually did for India. And the second thing they took the eye of the ball is, you know, vaccinations. You know, about hardly 10% of the Indian population have got even one dose of the vaccine, you know, a single dose of the vaccine. So a huge proportion of the population are susceptible. So when you release the lockdowns and the social measures, and you have this huge amount of susceptible people, then infections will just, you know, rise as we are seeing right now in India. They never prepared themselves, you know, to start vaccination, the production, you know, ramp up the production and then vaccinate people. And that, I think, is a lesson for the rest of the world.
And you said the other thing, too, you said is because you're talking about here in the United States that maybe by August, you know, we could be at that point. But if as we're getting vaccinated, we still have to do the even with the new CDC guidelines, we still have to, you know, try to social distance, do the masks. But if we don't, do we put ourselves at risk? In India, like they did in India?
I mean, I think, you know, it depends on, that's why I come back, you know, and I myself have to blink when I look at the results, you know, of the models. You know, I come back to this central point that if we have enough people, 60%, 50% people who are immunized, then, you know, we've modeled, you know, releasing all interventions, right? We modeled into the future. If you release it in May, you're going to get a big spike because there's still a substantive, you know, a number of people who are susceptible. If you release it in June, that spike will lessen because the fuel, once again, are the susceptibles.
Yes.
If you shrink the susceptibles going forward with vaccination, you know, that is where the infections are going to come from. You're going to shrink the size of the resurgence, which India never did. And that is why you're getting that huge problem in India and in Brazil and in Turkey.
And this is why we keep hearing them say, you know, again, even though they've kind of relaxed it a little bit today, we heard from the CDC, still with the masks, still with the social distancing, we're not yet out of the woods with this one. No. Dr. Michael, thank you so much for
the
time. I
will just say one more thing, Louis,
yes,
before
go ahead.
And I'm not saying that you shouldn't stop, you know, with face masks. I think you should, you know, until we get to very high levels of herd immunity. Which could be 80% or whatever. But the important thing about face masks is you will prevent any, you know, spread of any new mutants. And that is important.
Very good point. Dr. Michael, again, thank you for the time today and the information. He is Dr. Edward Michael, epidemiologist at the University of South Florida, talking again about vaccine hesitancy and how do we encourage people to get their shots. We're also talking with Veronica Zaragovia, WLRN's healthcare reporter, and Dr. Cheryl Holder, professor at FIU, again, talking about this and taking your calls. Again, the number 800-743-9576. Before I get back to the phones, though, Dr. Holder, something interesting that the last caller asked is, how long is this going to be with us, this coronavirus?
Well, this could be years. If you look at, despite that modeling, the concern is that every time somebody gets infected, there's with transmission, there's replication and a chance of a variant. And it is in that fear that we say that it's very hard to predict that you will get to even this. You may get herd immunity temporarily until the variant shows up that these vaccines no longer respond to. I've had patients who've been infected twice already, and because their immune system wasn't as good, so even though it was less than 3 months from the first infection, they got the variant, and they were sick again.
Yeah.
I've had patients who've had the vaccine, and they got another infection. So there's going to be, they didn't wait for the full 6 weeks like they should. So we know that with infection comes the replication comes the risk of variants. This is a novel virus. We've never seen this before. So true herd immunity, where you can say it'll never come through, that's 70% of 7.8 billion people in the world being either had the infection or vaccinated against the infection. So this is not going away, which is what I tell folks who say they want to wait it out. I don't know what waiting it out means unless you're able to stay in a little bubble of friends who are fully vaccinated, work in an area, and live your life that way.
Right.
But once you step out of that, you're looking at years. So I encourage everyone to be vaccinated so we can get that larger bubble to include not just you and your small social circle, but include an entire community. So then we can move freely among our communities, even if we have a mask. But if you get sick, you're not going to end up sick and dying.
All right.
You get a little cold.
Yeah. I want to bring in, we're going to take a break here in just a moment. We're going to keep this conversation going throughout the program, but I want to bring in Laureen Chant with the Health Foundation of South Florida. She's the CEO. Laureen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you. By the way, your organization is leading the I Did It South Florida campaign. What is that campaign?
Actually, it's a campaign that we built with our grassroots partners. Dr. Cheryl Holder is an integral part of what we're working on. And essentially, it is to attempt to build confidence in the vaccine, specifically targeting the communities we've been discussing, and really understanding that there is a tremendous amount of misinformation, which we've spoken about, and a lack of trust, and believing and knowing that the key to building trust is providing information through our trust messages. So the I Did It campaign is really a way for our partners and members of the community to weigh in, to talk about why they vaccinated, what they chose, why they chose to vaccinate, and kind of spread that good word. I'd like to think of it, Chris, as a movement. It's a movement.
Yeah. All right. You know what I was wondering is with the campaign like this is, you know, is it, do you do it through mostly, television, radio, social media? What's the best way to reach people with this? How do you do it?
Yeah, I think the best way, it's two things, which I think is it's hyper-targeted, and we have trusted messengers like Dr. Holder and many grassroots organizations who are going that extra mile and talking to the people that they're serving and who trust them. But it's also really broad as well. So you just mentioned public service announcements, television, radio, honestly, billboards in our most vulnerable communities, social media, hashtag I Did It, where we'll be pulling from social media photos of individuals who went out, got vaccinated, and want to celebrate. And I think someone on this call earlier talked about that relief factor of knowing that you can be in the community and feel more safe and less fearful. So really trying to build confidence among our most hesitant community members by showing them that people are doing it safely, and are celebrating and sort of free to move about, right, as they say,
right,
because they've been vaccinated. It's about the information, Chris. It's really about informing people, honestly, who have been filled with a lot of disinformation, which is very unique
and
to
we were
this
talking,
medical, right?
We were talking about the misinformation that's out there. There's a lot of it. Again, the number is 800-743-9576. Before we go to break, I want to go to the phones. We got a lot of folks on the line. Please hold tight. If you can't hold or if you don't want to hold, you can always send us your message or question via social media at WLRN Sundial. I want to go to Giselle in Miami Shores. Giselle, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much. wanted to comment. I lost both of my parents within 3 days to COVID, and I got to see the impact of the disease. It is a horrible, horrible death, and I don't think people understand how dramatic it is and how awful it is for the people that they are left behind. I had to drop my mother at the emergency room door, and I never saw her alive again. She was dead in 15 hours. I've never been a vaccination person, and I could not wait to get my vaccine. I just got my second shot on Monday. I feel great, and I did it for my parents who couldn't have gotten the vaccine, and I did it for society. I don't want anybody to suffer what those of us who've lost people to COVID are suffering. It is traumatic.
First of all, Giselle, I am so sorry for your loss, both parents. Did you at any point, did you ever get COVID?
I did get COVID. I got it from driving my stepfather to the hospital.
I see. And for the most part, though, it didn't affect you.
I had no symptoms.
I see.
And that's, it's a crazy disease. I had no symptoms, and it killed both my parents.
Before this happened, you said that you weren't that big into vaccines. I mean, did you always think, as all of this was going down, that that's just not something I'm going to ever worry about?
I did not vaccinate my children when they were small. This was 35 years ago.
Yeah.
And I made that decision based on science. I was extremely well read and knowledgeable about those vaccines. I don't like to put things in my body that I don't know about, and it's scary. It scared me. I don't know what's in that shot. But I did know, and I did see what it did to my parents. I was blessed to sit with my stepfather in the COVID ward while he died, and hold his hand so he didn't die alone. There's no way I wasn't going to get vaccinated. I don't want to go out like that. And the fact that if you do get it, that you are dying by yourself, is horrible. It's just a horrible situation. And it's not just for old people or people with underlying issues. I'm on a Facebook page with 9,000 people who have lost people to COVID. And it is children who are getting it. They're young people who are getting it. There are healthy people who are getting it.
Yeah.
It does not care who it takes.
Do you before I let you go, Giselle, I'm curious because, you know, you had said that you had been well-read on the other vaccines, but do you look back now and think maybe, you know what, maybe, because there's still people who don't know what are in these vaccines, but you've seen firsthand what can happen. Do you ever look back and think, should have done things differently?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what your last statement was.
No, I was just asking if you know, considering what you've been through, you had mentioned how, you know, earlier in your life you had been against vaccines and you didn't vaccinate your children. But with everything you've seen and experienced, do you look back and wonder, maybe I should have?
I think that with regards to my children, there are 35 years of data and evidence now that I did not have then. And I probably would have made a different choice.
I see. Well, first of all, Giselle, again, I'm sorry for your loss, but I do appreciate you sharing with us because it's powerful. And a lot of people have heard that. And that, I think, may help in a lot of ways. Giselle, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you for your show. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break, come back with our panel conversation again about vaccine hesitancy. You're listening to Sundial here on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks again for joining us. We decided to go ahead and continue this conversation on vaccine hesitancy. We'll move our conversation about Joan Didion to tomorrow. We're going to go to the phones here in just a moment. I got some folks who've been waiting. Again, what is it that is holding you back from getting that shot? Or maybe someone you know, what are the questions that you have? I wanted to come back to Dr. Holder, Dr. Cheryl Holder, professor at FIU. And Dr. Holder, interesting, you listened to that last call. And something that Giselle pointed out that, you know, she had this experience. And the hardest part of COVID is the fact that when you die alone because nobody could be around you. They have to quarantine that person away from everybody else, so you will not be there in those final moments. That's had a profound impact on a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so sorry for her loss. And so many of the people I've talked to who have experienced COVID and lost family members and coworkers and colleagues like I have, we understand that pain of being alone. And I think that's what, like, that was one of her reasons to make sure she got vaccinated. And it does make it easier to make that decision to vaccinate when you've experienced what the worst part of COVID is. And we don't want anyone to go through that. So, you know, she vaccinated for her community and also for herself, but also for her community. And that is a great thought because she does not want anyone else to go through the pain. We are better with our supplies. We have all our PPEs and we have our protection. But still, somebody who's very sick with COVID has a large amount of the virus. And so it's not easy. You're not going to be able to sit at the bedside and hold their hands and say goodbye.
Yeah.
So that we can, and that the good thing is we don't have to do that. I mean, we have monoclonal antibodies. If you get a little sick, we have the vaccine. We don't have to go down that path if we all work together.
Yeah. Veronica Zaragovia, health reporter for WLRN, also with us. Veronica, you wanted to chime in on that last call.
Yeah, I did because it, you know, a lot of people, first of all, we don't hear as many of these tragedies because the vaccinations, the rollout is reaching so many more people. And that is helping that if you do catch the coronavirus, that your symptoms would be much weaker if you were vaccinated. But I did also want to share that something that Dr. Holder had mentioned earlier about making access easier is that I noticed when I've been to Liberty City or when I go to any of the bigger sites that people have gone in groups. I met a gentleman who had gone with his three nieces. I've seen, you know, all sorts of different family members going together. And so if they would just make vaccinations easier for people to get to and they can go in groups or once they see that one family member has gotten a shot and felt fine, then that helps other people get vaccinated, maybe more than seeing an advertisement of someone they don't know. And so in Orange County, the Florida Department of Health is taking a mobile unit into neighborhoods. And I think that's a really big part that's missing is like, yes, these sites are empty, but a lot of the younger people who are working maybe hourly jobs, they can't get to Miami-Dade College or Hard Rock as easily as if it was in the evening hours, like in their neighborhoods. And so that's just what I'm hearing from people that, you know, there's that part that's still missing, making it even easier.
Yeah. Laureen Chant, again, CEO with Health Foundation of South Florida with us as well. Laureen, you hear stories like that. I mean, you have the I Did It campaign, but that's kind of, it's a little focused more on the positivity, the positiveness of getting the vaccine. You did it, you did your part. But, you know, do you think stories like that, because that Giselle was a person who didn't want vaccinations, didn't believe in vaccinations, but it took that tragedy for her to finally see maybe this is the way to go. Sometimes do you think that the pain is the way to market something to get people to move?
I'll tell you, it is about storytelling. Anytime you think about things that stick with people, probably when we hang up, Giselle's story will be the thing that people remember, right? So telling stories about why and what happens when not, I think it can be extremely motivating. And really, if you, Dawn, your callers, I mean, I don't know if you planted them. I mean, they are the best callers because they really do represent what sort of the different groups and what's being experienced. So Dawn talked about wanting to wait, but then she spoke to a good friend, and ultimately that caused her to talk to her doctor. And honestly, so there are more Dawns, thankfully, thank goodness, than there are Giselles, right? And so that journey around, you know, like you said, kind of wanting to wait, not being sure, is it the right thing or the right choice for me? But then having that person that they trust step in and create at least some degree of interest and maybe some confidence, and then seeking out more information. So for me, Chris, it really is about the stories, and it is an individual choice. And I hope for everybody that there are as few Giselles as possible, because you know, the story she told is very real. And as Dr. Holder said, there are risks, and you don't know the risk you're taking until you're in that situation. And then it's too late for you. Right. So it's very hard. It's very different.
No, it is. It is for everybody. All right. I want to get back to the phones here. We got some folks who are waiting. I'm going to start with Adam first. Adam in Miami Beach. Thank you for holding. Adam, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I've run across a number of different people who are vaccine hesitant, and basically I've come across people with two different reasons. First of all, I'm in contact with a number of people on a daily basis in the medical profession, and I speak with doctors and nurse practitioners and RNs, and very largely for the doctors and nurse practitioners and very largely for the RNs, they're not only vaccinated, but got vaccinated as soon as they could find one, even before their organizations had one. As soon as one was available, they did it. On the other hand, there are people who are at the CNA, or certified nursing assistant level, who go and sit in people's homes and help them when they're direly ill and so forth. Many of these people have a profile where they're elderly women, or women in their 60s, I should say, not that elderly,
right.
But 63, 65, and many of them are African-American or Latin-American immigrants to the United States. So, and many of them, I would say a good majority, are vaccine hesitant. And the reason that's usually given is because they say the vaccine doesn't work for everybody. It really doesn't work for everybody.
No, that's a good point. That's why I brought you in, because you had brought up this issue. People have the question about efficacy, right? It's the efficacy that they're curious about.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so I apologize only because of time. Thank you for bringing that up. That's why I brought you in, Adam. I want to go to Dr. Holder now. Dr. Holder, he brings this issue up. When people say that, how do you respond? What do you tell people about the efficacy of a vaccine?
Gosh, the data is fabulous. That's the one incredibly excellent thing that we know the vaccine works, from preventing you from getting severe disease and dying. That is 100% despite the variants that are out there. So what people want, where you're going to get a vaccine and you can say you will never get infected and never get anything, that they can't say yet. But the end point of this study was not whether we're going to stop you. The key was, we don't want you to get sick and die. And that's been proven. And I can tell you the patients who have gotten infected, why they had part of the vaccine, have proven that they got a little symptomatic, but they didn't get very sick. They didn't get sick and die. So the vaccine is very, very efficacious. And in real world conditions, because we've done now millions and millions of people. So that's the great news about the vaccine. And I spread that all the time, because that's what we want to make sure, that when you get sick, you're not going to get sick and die and end up dying in a few days when we can prevent that.
I want to get one more call in here, if I can, real quickly. I want to go to Elizabeth in Palm Beach. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I have a question for the doctor. What would you say to someone such as myself, 66 years old, not an anti-vaxxer, full believer in allopathic and holistic medicine, but who has ITP, who almost died 9 times in her life, requiring blood transfusion, post-vaccine, also allergic to possibly polysorbate 80, which will be tested. I am going to see a hematologist, and I have read and had it explained to me by medical professionals, including 3 local immunologists and virologists, all 4, that includes the AstraZeneca, not yet, in this nation. Yeah, I want to know what she has to say to that, to someone such as myself.
All right.
Actually, yeah.
Well, I have to stop you there only because of time. But Dr. Holder, if you could real quickly, if you could answer her question.
I think I love that question because it had its answer in it. Those are the easiest ones for me. She saw her doctor. She saw her specialist. There are some the platforms that these things are built on. People are allergic. That's why if you look at the AstraZeneca and the J&J, they use an adenovirus to bring that vaccine, to bring that messenger into you. So maybe you wouldn't want that one. There are some Novavaxes coming where they harness the protein and they really don't bring other things. So there might be a version that you will feel more comfortable.
Okay.
I think the data is showing that you should protect yourself because you're going to do worse if you got the real thing.
And I have to stop you there only because of time. Great conversation today. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Cheryl Holder, Associate Professor at FIU's Herbert Wertheim College of Medicine. Also, Veronica Zaragovia, WLRN's healthcare reporter, and Laureen Chant, CEO of Health Foundation of South Florida. Learn more about their campaign, I Did It, on our social media, WLRN Sundial. That's our program for this Tuesday, April 27th. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about the restaurant business. They're having trouble finding workers. Also, we'll have that book club discussion coming up tomorrow. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks again for listening. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute.